You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City
for
right
more.
Here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis
oh, yes!
City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Welcome back, folks. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I am John, and alongside me is my partner in crime, the Nate Morales. We have to apologize. We completely just forgot to do a podcast this week. So it's coming out on Saturday instead of Thursday or Friday, which is normally our cadence. We realized that, Nate, what, like 7:30 today?
Yeah.
P.M.?
Yeah. Yep.
So we couldn't just leave it go. You know, we have to bring things to the people.
And there's stuff we have to talk about.
There is stuff to talk about. But outside of that, Nate, how you doing? We had a week off.
We did? Yeah. Yeah, we did. I think, a couple of away games and a forfeit that, game that didn't happen. And it's like, oh,
not
wow.
A forfeit. A reschedule.
Reschedule. That's what I mean. Yep. And
no midweek game.
No midweek game, so it's just like, man, what do you even do with yourself? And the answer is forget about the podcast.
Yeah, completely forget. And be like, oh shit, there's things for us to do. But we did have some things that happened last week. Father's Day was not so happy in St. Croix as the Crows bow out of the Super Cup, falling 2-1 to the St. Croix Legends. And the Maple Brook 58ers rage quit, so the Futures win the division. Congratulations to JJ and the staff and all the players of the Futures program on their forfeit 2-0 victory. And that sets them up for the magic 26 points we talked about last week. Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about what's up next for them tonight. But
yeah, and with that, Nate, and with that, we're back in the Super Cup.
Look at us.
Oh, well.
Look at us go. It would have been cool to have two teams. And I did confirm that the winner of, the 2023 Super Cup, the inaugural Super Cup, does not get an automatic placement. Mm. So if the UPSL squad wanted to, they would have to put in a team in the open qualifying slot, which would mean they'd have to go through, similar to what we go through for the Open Cup. Yeah. And that's open to any men's team and above U18, I believe, U18 and above in Minnesota. So as long as you're affiliated with a league, you can enter that open qualifying, which cool. I hope is like chocked full of teams, like maybe some of the teams from the Hispanic League, the African League, and not just, some of the other UPSL or MPSL teams that want to get in, but they can get in too. So if we wanted to do that, we could. I don't know if we talked about it yet. I know we haven't talked about it yet.
No.
From a club perspective. So something to think about.
Yeah. Something to think about. Yeah. Rough week otherwise, right? Like, Father's Day, the Father's Day loss to St. Croix, and like the losses just keep piling up on the USL2 side.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's like, sometimes it's just hard to get up for a pod. But today, John, I got to tell you, I read the article that John Marthaler posted on Soda Soccer, and it was like exactly what I needed, because it's like we've been great without watching Minneapolis City for a while. So, had a disappointing trip out to St. Croix, haven't really seen the UPSL squad in action, and it was just like, man, it was a wonderful reminder of why I fell in love with the club in 2016. Mm-hmm. When we first, when you founded it and you've got me involved. And just what about it has been so captivating and has kind of bonded me to it over the years. And so it was really nice refresher to kind of get me up from feeling down about all the L's, man.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know what it did for me? It washed away the feed for me of Duluth talking about how they're the number one team in the country in the NPSL. And they're the number one team in the country. They're 9-0. I've watched a couple of their games, and they play typical good Duluth soccer, where they have talent. I think the game management piece by Coach John Morgan is still where he falls down a little bit, but they don't have to worry about that because the division is garbage, man. Like every it is. And like, so then I see all that stuff going from Duluth, and I'm like, it's interesting how we leave the division and then they're 9-0 and sitting on top of the country. And you know, no disrespect to them, but the division I don't think is very strong. And I just kept seeing, you know, all of their victories over and over again. And we were racking up all of our losses. And I'm just thinking about, like, really looking forward to that July 18th matchup, because I believe that one of the teams we're going to talk about today, our UPSL Futures team, I believe they would contend for the title in the NPSL. And it's just an interesting turnover of what that league kind of was going towards. I thought it was getting really strong, and then we left, and I don't know what happened to it. Duluth stayed strong. Met City's kind of a shell of themselves coming off of winning the division last year with by and large the same roster. But anyways, without getting too far into that, I'm thinking all these things that I just said over the course of the last like 3 weeks, and pretty much ever since the Bavarians win. It was almost a month ago. And then reading that article today, I got the same feels you did. I started thinking back to like sitting in the shed with you, like basically doing this podcast in front of a live audience every week when we were playing playing games at the Barnyard, and how shitty the field was, and how we thought it would be a competitive advantage, and we didn't win any games there except for one, our first game ever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like the road trips, like Dan having to hunt down the owner of Cedar Rapids Rampage for like the money he owed us for the hotels, like, and us having to like go through the city of, you know, Cedar Rapids trying to find this guy, and like, you know, and you know, the trip to Madison where we pulled off the victory against Madison with 11 guys, you know, and like I had to coach the team with Jeremy. And you and I got, you know, I showed up at your house to go there, and it was like, well, I guess I'm coaching the team, you know, like all those things, like in that first year, it started to kind of flood back. And then it got me really excited about, yeah, there's wins and losses, and we haven't necessarily been at our winning ways, but I still see the positives of what we're continuing to do. And God, thank God for the future. Because they're continuing to rack up trophies.
Yep.
And that's awesome. But where I see it is that every franchise has a downturn. Even the franchises that have all the money in professional sports, there's always a downturn. But at our level with no money, a downturn hurts you. You know, you don't have the millionaire investor to be able to pump money into a franchise that's taking some L's. And people stop coming because they want to see winners. And I know these guys want to win, and they're playing as hard as they can, and just the ball's not bouncing our way. But you look at the futures and what's coming up, and keeping some of that core within the club as they get older and they've been playing together, like that's where the advantages of what we're doing, I think, comes through. And that article kind of brought it all together for me.
Hell yeah. So go ahead and read it if you haven't. Check it out on Twitter. John Marthaler is the staff writer for Soda Soccer. You can follow him at J Marthaler, MARTHALER. Really nice piece on Soda Soccer. You can also find that at Soda Soccer's page at Soda SOC. So those of us that made the trip out to St. Croix, out to Stillwater, we're hoping at least for a repeat of last year's draw in St. Croix. I'll tell you, John, the last time I was at that stadium, I did see a victory by the team I was rooting for. That was Woodbury beating Stillwater in the section finals.
Yeah, and I was down the ponies.
I was hoping for that same same energy, that shit on the ponies energy, but I did not get it. And I don't know, what can I say, man? It was Dad's Day. They had a food truck that left 5 minutes into the game. There were some weird homeless guys who were blowing huge
bubble header for them as blowing, a club.
I know, the women's side, the UPSL side, and the USL side played all in a row, and it was like, yikes. So these weird homeless guys are blowing huge bubbles for the kids. I mean, what an environment for soccer.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Into that environment came a Crows squad that those of us in the crowd quickly realized was not at 100%. We got a little worried once the game started and we saw who was on the bench.
Yeah, and who wasn't in the starting lineup. So who we saw in the starting lineup was in goal, Kaylin Matta-Castillo, and then across the back line was the return of Carson Pena. And I'm gonna say this, Nate. I'm starting to turn around on Carson Pena.
Okay.
After the first game, I was like, I don't see it. I see his energy. He had some miscues. He missed a couple opportunities to get on the score sheet. And I was like, you know what? It's what I saw on his tape and him in college. And I'm just not seeing it yet. I'm seeing it now. So I'm a Carson Pena believer, even outside the fact that Gus really likes Carson Pena. So I, because of his hair, which he cut. So I haven't broke the news to Gus yet on that one. excuse me. Allergy cough. So joining Carson was Wes Lawrence sliding into the left center back spot, partnering with Aiden O'Driscoll, seeing that captain Jonah Garcia was left off the team sheet due to a late scratch because of a hamstring injury. So it was a precautionary thing because there's a lot of soccer coming up and some travel that we're really going to need Jonah for. So Coach Craig decided to move Aiden O'Driscoll into the center back spot. And then rounding out the back four was Andrew Szczesinski making his first start with the USL2 squad. At the right back. And then your midfield three was Jameson Charles, Brian Lopez, and then Mark Gallagher, the newcomer, getting his first start. And then your front three was unchanged. But one thing I'll note about Aiden O'Driscoll, we've talked about, you know, no disrespect, Aiden, we've said this before, like the physical limitations from him from like a pace perspective. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like Nathan Donovan, Aiden O'Driscoll, like he outran some of our more athletic center backs, and what's going to happen? So we'll get into how that played out in a little bit. But that was kind of, for me, that was like 1A on my list. I was like, how's that going to work? And then on the bench was backup goalkeeper Gabe Kofel, Clemente, Scotty Heinen making his return, and Faden Oruokondo and Dennis Mensah. So if you're counting there, we had two roster spots open. And one of them was the Jonah Garcia late scratch. And then it looks like we only were planning on taking 17 to the match. Maybe a lot of guys going back to Dad's Day. And, you know, we pride ourselves as a club on letting people have a life during the summer since we are all local. So this is just one of those cases of it was who do we have left to be able to play with the Futures having their stuff already planned. It was something that we just had to deal with.
Yeah, and I was not mad, John, at the pairing of Wes Lawrence as Aiden O'Driscoll as the game unfolded. And I'll tell you, in fact, I was loving it. Ba da ba ba ba. Like, City held a really great defensive line to stop that Donovan attack. Wes Lawrence is tall, so
fearless.
Yep, and so there were really, I was not worried about any shenanigans on any corner kicks. It was I liked it. I think it was a great stopgap as we wait for Curtis Wagner and Jonah to come back.
I completely agree with you, Nate. I that's why I kind of mentioned it in the run-up with the lineup, is that I was a little worried about it. But when I was thinking about it, after the initial worry wore off, and I was drinking beers in my garage, streaming the game on the big screen alone because no one wanted to watch the game with me. And I was like thinking to myself, who else would I put back there that I would trust on the ball? And I immediately went to Aiden O'Driscoll. He's such a smart soccer player. And he's just that wily veteran presence that we lose in Jonah. And then you slide in your oldest member on the squad, who's just a fantastic reader of the game and calm on the ball. I thought it was great. And then defensively, I'm like, holy cow, like, as the game wore on, I was like, man, like Aiden's coming in with tackles. He's reading passing lanes. Wes is flying through. You know, like the physicality against the legends that they didn't really like. They were kind of shying away from it. And I was like, all right, like we're okay in the back line.
Yeah, yeah, and it was, I would say, it was one of those games where, you know, it was nice to not have to worry about that. Because we, yeah. You know,
when it looks like a worry.
Exactly. What made me sad, I think, was that we really weren't able to get the center midfield involved as much again, and that really hurt the attack. I think there were some occasions early where City was able to, and even later, where City was able to move the ball quickly through the midfield via Gallagher, Lopez, which was nice to see, and a winger, kind of a lot of 1-2s. Some nice runs, second and third runners. And we looked really dangerous in those instances. But I think where we fell flat was the buildup, you know, starting that buildup in the back. I think a lot of that had to start out wide with Szczęsny or Pena, which is probably why you liked that. I feel like usually Jamison Charles does the job of two guys. And today, on Sunday, it was hard to find him.
Yeah, I think so too. I thought that it was probably one of the least favorable appearances for Jamison. I know probably for himself as well, but you look to get more out of him, and on that day you kind of needed it. And I think it could be attributed to him having to connect closer to the back line and worry more on his defensive side of duties instead of the offensive side. But when we moved the ball 1-2 touch, like there was, we walked right past or right through the legends. And I was concerned why we went away from that, because it was working. But then we talked about it with the USL2 squad, I believe last week, where it's like 1-2 touch Carlos Robles, love him. 3-4 touch Carlos Robles, please go back to 1-2 touch Carlos Robles.
Yeah, same could be said with Brian Lopez.
Exactly. And same could be said with Jamison and Mark. There were a lot of times where the only reason that St. Croix was dangerous is because on our third and fourth touch, they were able to take the ball off of us. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, was a contributing factor to the bypassing of those guys in the middle, where the outside wingers were like, I'm just going to try to either switch the field to the other winger or try to smash a ball into Hakim, who is basically marked out of the Legends games. Let's just call it that. They know what he can do. We'll talk about what he did in the game, but he's basically rendered borderline ineffective because he's having to fight so hard to find space to get a ball. So we were just kind of pumping him into him, and there's not much he can do with it when he's got 2-3 guys around him.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, John, this is the reason I don't go to the bathroom as much as I want to in games. And that's because every time I go to the bathroom, something happens.
Why did you wear a diaper? So
That would be clutch. That's the college party. That's the party move right there.
I'll get a catheter. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Whatever will help, Nate. I'm here for you.
Let's play Edward 40 hands.
a good trick to win that, by the way, but we'll talk about that a later date.
On the way to the bathroom, you know, I hear a whistle as I walk in, and I'm like, that whistle was not on our side of the field, and there was some cheering. I hope it wasn't a penalty. And by the time I come out, I see the free kick getting lined up. So I'm like, oh, okay, good. Whew, no PKs here. But instead, it was a free kick by Colton Prater, and he puts it low and around the wall, like really nicely taken.
It was a great free kick. It was a great goal.
To take the lead.
Yeah. What happened on that, because it's etched in my memory, is
what Kalen happened?
Kalen came off his line, which was basically a routine, like pick up the ball. Like there was no pressure, you would say. And he got mixed up on all the American football lines and the lacrosse lines. And he ended up basically catching the ball 2 yards outside of his box, in front of his box. And you can't do that in soccer, Nate. That's why they have an 18-yard box. And I don't fault him for that, because I can't tell you how many times in a game where there's football lines that I have like taken a touch to receive a pass with no one around me, and I'm like 3 yards out of bounds because there's like lines everywhere. Mm-hmm. Or I've thrown the ball in from the football lines instead of the soccer lines. So I get it. But like, it, that's kind of one of those inexcusable things that you gotta know your box. You gotta own it. And he was not even in it. So that's what was happening when you were taking the leak.
Yeah. That's that lines up, I guess, with what I heard. I feels like a mistake that should not have been made.
Yes, correct.
Hard to understand how that would have happened. But we'll talk a little bit more about Kalen in a bit. So we go down 1-0, but as we've said, we were liking the defensive effort. We were dangerous at times when we were able to move the ball correctly. Like, what do you do? What do you do at the half, especially knowing that you have limited changes to make?
Well, I mean, I don't know, to be honest with you, because we weren't playing bad soccer and we weren't really getting beaten. You know, we had equalized. What we saw was the St. Croix threat. And I thought that was a fantastic job of coaching that in, as we've seen some tactical adjustments work for us from a trained in perspective and some not work. Insert the Rochester FC Loons game.
Yep.
That one was just, well, I don't know. That one's one of those games you just forget. But this one, I saw some really good stuff from our team. It was this, we haven't quite connected the offensive side of the ball. And I don't know. It's not a case of a revolving door. Because in the past years, like, we've had a slow offensive start a couple times, still winning games or getting good draws. But it took us a while to kind of get going offensively. That was because there were different guys coming in and out. So now, Nate, we have a front three, though, that has been unchanged for how many games? Six games? Five games?
Yeah. Yeah.
That there should be no excuse on the cohesion there. We started seeing some bright spots of Bechtel finding Goldman on the back post, Morgan kind of dropping in, hold up play, turning, distributing ball to Bechtel, where there's that natural collegiate connection there. But we just haven't seen it kind of all put together. So we're going into a tough stretch of games here where it needs to, we need to figure, we need to score some goals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't know what you do with that. You don't really change much. You go out and then at some point you're down 1-0. You have to push for what's next.
Yeah.
If you don't get that goal through the run of play.
Yeah. And I think adding Mensah in for Gallagher,
That was a good sub.
That was about all you could do, right? Dennis is a little bit more familiar with the guys around him, and I think you saw that those one-two movements return, right? So mm-hmm. So that was nice. But Kalen again with a what in the world moment leading to the Luka contestable goal. I'm going to say, John, last week I gave him some credit. Last week I gave him some credit that it's tough to give up five, especially when only one or so is your fault, right? So but it looked like this week it felt like he came out feeling like he had to do it all by himself because of what happened last time.
I don't know, man. I don't know what the mindset is.
I don't know.
Talk to him either.
And it's just like there's no reason for him to have been off his line there to get basically the ball taken off of his feet, and then it turned into just a really messy moment with the worst possible outcome scored on by a traitor.
Yeah, I mean, you do you, man. my take on it was the ball was knocked back to him, not off of someone's foot. So he could have picked it up. And if you watch it back again, he kind of glances to where the ball came from and then lets it bounce off the turf into his chest like he had time, when he could have just picked the ball up and rolled it to Wes Lawrence, mm-hmm. who thought that was going to happen. So he's 15 yards up the field. And Aiden O'Driscoll, who I believe chested or headed the ball back to him, was completely out of the play because he had headed the ball back. And the onrushing Donovan, I mean, smart on him to realize, like, oh, this guy's not picking it up, pressured him. And then it's an instance that everyone loves when the goalkeeper gets the ball to his foot and he has to do an athletic movement with it. all around the world, people love seeing that when their home goalkeeper does that. And he just got stripped, and then the ball pops to Luka Contestable, and he, you know, throws up a prayer, and it just sneaks in. But we had no one able to even go back to stop it from going in because everyone was up the field thinking that Kalen was going to pick up the ball and start the attack.
Yeah.
There was a listener question that came in this week, and that was around goal scorer Luka Contestable for the Legends, and around how and why is he able to play for another team in our division after starting the season with us. Well, how it shakes out is that technically Luka had not featured in the USL for us in the conference. He was not happy with the depth chart for two games and asked for his release. And we are, you know, we're willing to grant players releases if it's not working out. Clearly it wasn't working out for him. And there were other options that the coaching staff felt okay with. And he filed his switch paperwork with us, signing off an approval with the league. So that's how that happens. So it's kind of like a mid-season transfer. You can do that.
Hmm. Well, boo-hoo.
So that's what happened. So that's for listener Paul, who asked that question, and any other listener who was wondering.
I'll tell you what, though, man. I'll give it to the Crows. They didn't quit, and Hakeem Morgan had a nice goal in the 69th minute, which was nice.
I mean, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that was it. I think, and it was clear that if the comeback wasn't on, I mean, the comeback sure felt like it was on. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought it was the spark we needed. You know, everyone talks about the most dangerous score in soccer, and I think all the times you're winning, unless it's by 5+ goals, it's a dangerous score line. But 2-0 seems to be the score line that people gravitate towards as the dangerous one, where you kind of fall asleep and a team can come back on you. I thought this was our magical moment. We're going to get going. Hakeem had started to grow into the game. I think with the Legends starting to sit back more, he was able to find pockets of space in front of the back line where he was unmarked, and we were starting to get him the ball, and he started to make really good runs off of it, and he just wasn't able to crack the code past Legends goalkeeper Tucker Mann. And in this instance, what he did just that. Like, he wasn't involved in the play, but he drifted into an area of space just outside the penalty spot on the right side of the box, and was able to capitalize on a ball that popped out to him, hitting it one time with that sweet left foot. And I'm like, okay, here we go. Like, this is it. But it wasn't it, Nate, was it?
No, it was not it. Because at one point, Aiden O'Driscoll has to track back, and he's chasing down. I think he actually might have had the ball. I'll have to watch it again.
Where he Aiden got fouled from behind by Donovan.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
Like, where, like, he had his back to the rest of the field and had position and stopped and got pushed from behind.
Yep.
And then I don't even remember or know what happened then, but you can continue.
Yeah, no, just from being there, I'm watching the play unfold, it looked like your standard, John, like the guy took the ball from Aiden, right?
And Ford fouls a defender
and no whistle. So Aiden keeps the play going, and he goes back to try to get it from him. And I think it wasn't quite side to side, but it wasn't like Aiden had arm over his shoulder, or he had a handful of jersey or anything. Or I think
kicked his legs out.
Right. It was Aiden was kind of
Donovan's left hand was behind him.
What's that?
Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, Donovan's left hand was behind him, kind of pushing Aiden O'Driscoll off. And Aiden was trying to get some leverage on him by wrapping his right arm around that left arm. And that was it. Donovan didn't even go down, John.
I know. He was actually off to goal.
Yeah. And the whistle blows, and the ref runs up and gives Aiden O'Driscoll his second yellow of the game. And it was, I mean, that was it. That was the game changing moment right there. And so go ahead.
On the stream, the commentators, they brought up a good point. They felt as though that there was nothing in it that they thought it was potentially a foul on Aiden, which it could be construed that he did foul him. Mm-hmm. But they thought that the referee forgot that Aiden was already on a yellow card, and that in a given instance where that happens, that maybe a referee would give Aiden the benefit of the doubt, considering that there was an advantage play after it and he didn't completely foul Donovan to stop a goal scoring action. Yeah. So that's what they thought happened. And I agree with them. I think that's what happened. I think the referee, I thought, including the Lions ref, I thought were just the Lions ref was just call happy. Like, I want to be relevant today.
Oh my gosh.
And the center ref, I thought, was letting certain things go, letting kind of accumulation pile up and then hit a breaking point. And then it was like, you get a card and you get a card. And they just all started flying, and the Legends were getting some for things I don't think they deserved. It was just a weird situation, but that was where any magic, I agree with you, it was the magic cup tipped over.
Yeah, I think what you saw and what you heard tracks with what happened on the field too, because the referee gave him the yellow and did not reach for the red.
Yeah, I think he might have heard it.
He walked away. The St. Croix players had to let him know that was his mm-hmm. second yellow, and it was only then. Do. Yep, it was only then. I mean, easily 20 to 30 seconds after he had given him the yellow, that he had to walk back and give him the red, and that was it. And that was the end of any comeback, I think. Even though the city tried, and I would say that for the most part did a really good job of continuing to press the issue. But you know, when you're going up against seven guys behind the ball, down a man, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
Final thoughts on the game, John, is I'll say this. The ref shortage is real, man. Like, the ref shortage is real. When you think about, you and myself and Kyle were having a conversation a while ago via text. Oh, and Dan was in on it too. And just this, even on the NPSL side, they're scrambling for refs. They're hoping to find placements. Guys have to bring their 18-year-old kid that just got his license to be the AR in an NPSL game. I mean, we saw what happened with the refereeing in the USL game against Rochester when Wagner got his red. I think that even at the youth level, when you've got parents screaming at 12-year-old refs. And just trying to do their job, or not just 16-year-old refs who are just trying to do their job reffing these 12-year-old games. Like, of course, the pipeline gets choked off and people don't want to ref.
100%.
And what happens, John, is you get referees who are that's when you get ARs who are screaming at players on the field in the lining up for free kicks or lining up to defend free kicks, telling them that they see their tactics and that they don't. That they're not going to let it fly. Like, I've never heard an AR yell.
They shouldn't be talking.
There should be
one voice on the field and this guy in the middle.
I couldn't believe it. That's when you get, ARs that have to scream at the ref to call, like literally scream at the ref to draw attention that he saw a foul. And you get referees that forget that they've issued their second yellow card.
Yeah. Excuse me.
The ref shortage is real, man. It's too bad.
It is real. But some of the refs that I don't want to say love to hate, but we enjoy having, but we'll still tell them when we don't think they're doing a good job. And as long as it's respectful, we're not seeing anymore. We're not Bryce. Seeing Bryce anymore.
Ah,
yep. Yeah. Like, I would actually can't believe I'm saying it, Nate. I would kill for Bryce to ref one of these games.
Yeah.
So it is real, but I know they're working hard on things, and you still have the what the fuck moments that as a fan where you're like, I don't know about that one, or how do they miss that? It's a tough job, and it's hard. I think Carl kind of mentioned it a couple post games ago, where it's like you got two asshole coaches on the sideline screaming at you, and you got 22 players screaming at you, and then you throw fans into it. It's like, why would you want to do that job? But as far as the game goes, I kind of already mentioned my final thought, and that is, when are we going to see the offense click? And
yeah, please.
And is it a result of how the midfield's been playing? Either one, we got to figure out how to make it connect, because we need to score some goals.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
Next up for the Crows is a midweek tilt where we get our first taste of Canada. That's sweet, sweet maple syrup coming down from Thunder Bay with the Thunder Bay Chill, who are currently sit in second place in the Deep North with a 4-1-1 record. They come into town, on Wednesday, June 28th at 7 p.m. And that game is at the Nelly. If you're interested in getting tickets, head on over to mblscitysc.com.
That's right. So let's switch over to the UPSL side, the future side, because that news is being much, that news has been much, much better lately. We were looking forward to the season, the final game of the season. I was just kind of watching my phone, hoping for a blowout as they went up to Maple Grove. But Maple Brook, who are already relegated to the second division, which I did not know was a thing, by the way, which is very, very cool.
Yeah, there's Pro Rel in the UPSL Premier Division.
I like that. I like that a lot.
And I don't know what they call that. Is it the first division and the Premier Division? I don't know what they call the second one.
Huh.
Check. Which I can look. Yeah. While you're talking.
That's pretty wild. And so so they chose this. They just took their ball and then went home. They decided not to field the team. They weren't interested in putting their guys out there against the Futures. And so the Futures get an automatic 3 points and an automatic regular season UPSL Midwest West title.
I don't like this. Let me stop there. I don't like that we won the title. Poor timing, John. What I don't like is the forfeit of a relegated team. I have mentioned before, and we've talked about it, that on how surprised we are at the elevation of the UPSL Midwest West Conference over the course of the last 2 years, and like the right direction that this league is going in. And I already talked today as well about the direction I think the MPSL is going in. I think that the UPSL is doing it right. Pro Rel aside, the teams are attracting stronger teams. And to have this happen, that completely stunts the growth, I believe. And I think it's one of those situations where it sours everything that the conference has been working towards, in my opinion. but it happened. But what that does, like you mentioned, is give the Crows their second UPSL Midwest West title in 3 years. And here's the fun fact, Nate. The UPSL version of the Crows has yet to lose a game in the UPSL, whether it's conference or tournament play, in 3 years. We were doing some stats before we hit record tonight, and we saw that the 2021 Prunty 352 team, with the dog on the field team, went eight wins, one draw, and zero losses. The 2022 team, the first edition of the Futures, went 7 wins, 3 draws, and a loss, and no losses. And that's where they lost to Valora, who had 8 wins, two draws, and zero losses, which got them the magical 26 points we mentioned. And then this year, it was we had that stat line with 8 wins, 2 draws, and 0 losses. So if you're doing the math, over the course of 3 years, that's 23 wins, 6 draws, no losses in 29 games. That's some good shit, Nate.
That is some good shit, and it usually bodes well for playoff prospects for these teams. I think it's only until we get late in the playoff. Once we get kind of to the national stage where teams start coming in from Long Island and stuff, that we really find that there truly are some strong UPSL teams out there.
Areas of the country that the UPSL is real strong. I remember talking to the Bavarians about it when they were moving in further into the tournament than we've ever gotten. And they were like, man, like, you think you guys have seen some good squads? Like, these teams from California are no joke. The teams from Miami are basically pro soccer players,
which is crazy, because it's like here in Minnesota, it's like the fifth division of soccer. But oh well,
the Winged Wizard plays in it.
Yeah, like, right.
Can you imagine that guy going and playing against like Miami, the old version of Miami FC?
No, but that means either way, regardless, we're in the playoffs, which is great. Minneapolis City gets the first seed, and we're playing Valora FC on Sunday. St. Croix is going to play Superior. And, John, it was almost Blackhawks. Blackhawks staged a late comeback. All they needed was a draw to squeak into that fourth place slot, which would have been kind of quite the downfall from Valora. But all in all, too sadly, in the end, they couldn't pull it off Minneapolis City Futures style and ended up falling. So Minneapolis City plays Valora. Very beatable. Nice matchup. St. Croix playing Superior. Hopefully Superior does us a favor. But remember, St. Croix and Superior were the teams that we had to stage those late comeback victories against. So hopefully we can come out a little stronger next time we see one of them. The match.
Well, I have stats in front of me here.
You do.
Nope, they took them down. Oh, wait, results. So in the two matchups between St. Croix and Superior, it was a 5-0 win at Stillwater High School for St. Croix. And then it was the only time it looks like they played.
That was
which
it.
Is that was it. So you hope Superior City comes to play.
Yeah.
Riding high off that victory they had to get in. So it's playoff time, baby. Playoff time to get soccer. Hot.
I love it. The Minneapolis City Valora match is this Sunday, June 25th already. My God, 7 p.m. at the Nelly. Get there and watch the Futures, man. This is good. Playoff soccer is fun as hell.
You on the call? Are you doing the PA?
I'll be in the PA. Yep, I'll be up there.
Nice. And no live stream available for this one, folks.
But so you have to be there.
We're working towards trying to get one if they get past this, which would be a nice, tasty matchup between St. Croix.
That's right. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. Thanks again to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. They've got top gear for all the lower league teams from Minneapolis to the other side of the world, with everything from mugs to t-shirts to sweet prints of our favorite lower league icons like the John Bizworm, Matt Elder, or Edor Nelson Field itself. And don't forget, you can use code CROWS10 for 10% off everything you buy. All those U.S. orders are going to ship right here from these United States, so there are no international shipping charges. Remember, Minneapolis City is a 501c3. So if you love the club, consider supporting with a charitable gift to the club that loves to give back. If you're interested in getting a hold of John or I, we made it simple. You can hit us up at the club or at the podcast Twitter at the People's Pitch, or you can email us at mcscpodcast@gmail.com, just like Paul did, which was great. And then you can always hit the club up on Twitter and complain to them at @MPLSCitySC. Well, that's it, guys. We will be back with you next week. It's going to probably be a later show because I'm going to be traveling. I'm going to be out of town. So later in the week, we will be back to you hopefully next Friday. I have been Nate, and that was John. Got to give a huge shout out to those UPSL Futures players and the coaching staff for bringing home another trophy for Daddy's Cabinet. Let's go get another one.
And you got home.